Today, my presentation will primarily focus on one of the community coalitions that we have in Alexandria called the Alexandria Childhood Obesity Action Network, or CONE, as we like to call it, and how we have been able to leverage community partnerships to create change. I have no personal relationships or financial relationships to disclose. So who we are and what we do. We were formed in 2009, we formed the Childhood Obesity Action Network after receiving a grant from NACHO. And what started out as a committee of about 10 people who are collecting data around obesity and doing strategic planning has really snowballed into a coalition of 80 community partners in the last year and a half. With a broad vision of coming together collaboratively to increase access to healthy foods and recreation. I like to put up a list of our partners. This is actually not a comprehensive list, but the idea that I really try to reinforce, that we try to reinforce, is that you have to bring a lot of different sectors together, a lot of different disciplines together, to be able to get the rich perspective to really create community change. So we have city agencies, we have faith groups, we have nonprofits, we have health organizations, and we have a lot of city residents who are engaged in this work. So over this presentation, I will be interweaving our lessons learned with stories about our action plan and current initiatives. And before I start talking about our action plan, here is our first lesson learned in doing this work, was to seize the moment and build political support when you can. Very soon after the Childhood Obesity Action Network created its action plan, the city started its strategic planning process. And previously, the city's strategic plan had never included health. This time, the health department was invited to the table. And as a staff person for the health department, as well as chair of the Childhood Obesity Action Network, one of the action items that I put in that plan were a number of issues that CONE had included in its action plan. So initiatives around playgrounds, initiatives around increasing access to healthy foods for low-income residents and for farmers markets to accept SNAP. So as a staff person for the city, I proposed those action plan items. Then city staffers who were in charge of that plan basically took it around to city meetings for the next 6 months. And at every meeting where this discussion was up, members from the Childhood Obesity Action Network and our umbrella coalition, the Partnership for a Healthier Alexandria, attended and really loudly advocated for these initiatives to be included. And so the strategic plan was able to include these health pieces, and we're still working on getting budget money driven towards the initiatives, but at the very least we know that City Council is going to be supportive of initiatives when we go forward asking them for help. Also, in the early days of our coalition's formation, there was another citizen movement that wanted to support local foods. The citizens group was working on a green foods resolution to support local food procurement in Alexandria, and we started to attend their meetings. And we started to talk to them about some overlapping areas of work that we could be doing, again, around farmers markets, around expanding community gardens, thinking about helping low-income residents grow their own food. And pretty soon, the Green Foods Resolution that they were excited about became the Healthy Green Foods Coalition that included a lot of the issues that we were talking about, as well as theirs. And our Childhood Obesity Action Network, again, became very vocally active in getting this resolution passed. It was the second of its kind in the country. So our key areas of focus: breastfeeding support and promotion, the preschool health network, playgrounds and Project Play, and then access to healthy foods. We really started on focusing on early childhood obesity, so children ages 2 to 5, but then looking at the key areas of influence. So the parents, obviously, the preschool and family daycare providers, where they spend a lot of their time, the schools, and then the much broader community. And the way that we're structured is that we have a leadership group that is about 10 to 15 people that does a lot of the strategic planning, and then all of these areas have at least one subcommittee and sometimes a couple different ones with a lot more community members who are engaged. What we found is that there are folks who love to do strategic planning, and there are folks who love to get their hands dirty and actually get engaged in projects, and they're not always going to overlap. So starting from birth, we knew in terms of breastfeeding promotion and encouragement that we wanted to bring together healthcare providers and family visiting programs to talk about how we could send consistent messaging about breastfeeding support and promotion to prenatal and postpartum mothers. We also knew that we wanted to encourage businesses to adopt breastfeeding-friendly policies, especially after the Health Care Act. But before we started doing that, we felt it was really important that the city be on board and be very, at least like publicly out there, that it was important to breastfeed, and that as one of the largest employers in our city, that they were promoting breastfeeding themselves, or at least had a breastfeeding-friendly policy. So we partnered with two city council members, actually both men, and amended an indecent exposure ordinance to make sure that everyone had the right to breastfeed in public. And we passed a resolution that supported breastfeeding in public, that encouraged businesses to breastfeed in public, but that also directed the city manager to identify breastfeeding space in every city department and to pass a breastfeeding-friendly policy. The Alexandria Health Department was a huge leader in this. Before we went through with the city, our health director said, you know, if we're going to be talking about breastfeeding in the community, we really need to make sure that our own house is in order. We need to have our own breast pump room. We need to have our own breastfeeding-friendly policy. And we need to make sure that we're working in the space with our federally qualified health center to be able to do the same things there. When we first started developing our community action plan, we did a lot of talking with residents. We did surveys with WIC clients. We did focus groups with parents and playgroups. And what we found was that people were saying, we need a place to play. We need a place to play. Particularly the young children. They kept saying they didn't have indoor space, that the youngest children, the toddlers and preschools, were not included in our city's playground planning. So we received a healthy eating active living grant from Kaiser Permanente, and we used that to do a huge community-wide playground assessment. We did public and private, indoor and outdoor. We did more focus groups and community conversations with parents, with child care providers, with playground providers, basically anyone that had a space with a playground or where a playground could be. And we did a photo voice project where we asked parents and playgroups to take pictures of we called it the big, the bad, and the ugly, what they loved about the playgrounds, what they hated about the playgrounds. And now we're launching Project Play. And the point of Project Play is to bring citizens together to get excited about playgrounds, to begin implementing some of our findings from the playground assessment, and to be building support for playgrounds in our community. So over the next several months, we're going to be looking at the assessment, figuring out where the gaps are, and trying to make some improvements to our current playgrounds where we found that things like shade, things like benches, things like sort of visual appearance actually make quite a difference in whether or not parents want to take their kids to a given playground or not. So making some of the small renovation changes, as well as looking large scale at who really does not have a place to play and how we can come together as a community to start working on that. One of the things that we have found in doing this is that grassroots and grass tips are very important. So in the policy systems and environmental change world, there's a lot of talk about the grass tips. But we really feel like you have to do it in tandem. So with Project Play, we're working to build community support for playgrounds by engaging residents in the process, but we're also very actively engaging our Parks and Recreation Department in this effort. They've been involved from the very beginning, and they know about what they're doing. They're supportive of what they're doing. And we ensured that playgrounds were in the strategic plan. So from the top to the bottom, we're working to build a community foundation around playgrounds. We started pulling together preschool directors, family daycare providers, and early child care specialists. And what we asked them was, one, do you think that we need healthier preschool and family daycare provider environments in Alexandria? And two, how are we going to do that? What would you suggest? The first thing that they said was, we want something easy. Let's start with the low-hanging fruit. Let's start with programming, and then let's figure out how we can snowball from there. So Color Me Healthy is an evidence-based preschool program that really focuses on getting children to touch, taste, smell, just smell fruits and vegetables. It's one of the few preschool programs that has high evaluations in terms of likelihood of teachers to actually use the program. We started with 10 preschools, 15 family daycare providers, and the parent play group, so that was about 1,000 kids, and have snowballed to 120 family daycare providers, and now we're launching Active Play, which is more physically active focused. So we really have focused in starting small and then planning big. We piloted Color Me Healthy, but through that pilot, the school system decided that Color Me Healthy was so popular among its teachers that it decided to adopt it for all of the preschool classrooms. The school nutrition service started providing healthy snacks for preschoolers, and so they decided to have a Color Me Healthy requirement before snack. They do a Color Me Healthy lesson beforehand. And the Department of Community and Human Services that licenses all of our family daycare providers decided that it was so popular among the daycare providers that piloted it that they wanted to use it as a training tool and a key program for all of the family daycare providers. So beyond just help, they felt like Color Me Healthy was an effective tool in teaching early childhood development techniques, and that's what they'll be using. And they're going to do the same thing with Active Play. We wanted to focus on building community capacity to increase residents' ability to grow their own food. We always had a focus on low-income residents, and so we partnered with the Public Housing Authority to create children's and adults' gardens. In the first year, we had 20 garden plots and a children's garden. The Virginia Cooperative Extension and the Master Gardening Program did gardening education for children and adults. We had local chefs who came in and did cooking classes for children and adults. And in our second year of doing this, we realized that a lot of the children at the Public Housing Family Center were reading two or three levels below grade level, and that when you're talking about first and second graders, that's a real concern because they're starting behind from the very beginning. So we partnered with a literacy program that does a read aloud with all the children, and once a month their lessons focus on health or physical activity. Now we're in the process of creating community workshops for other low-income housing providers as well as nonprofit organizations to help them learn how they can start and manage their own garden and support residents in growing food. So organizational change takes time, and it really does. We truly believe that you have to plant a seed and watch it grow. When we first started, the family center was, generally speaking, feeding the children hot dogs and beans because the center staff were tired and the kids were coming to them a lot for food. That was the primary place that they got food, and they did not have time to both do educational programming and feed kids in sort of what they thought of as very time-intensive ways. But we did a lot of work with the Family Center staff. They were really excited about the garden. We had a lot of vegetables coming out of the garden that they started using for cooking. They started learning about how to cook in healthy ways. And they've, as a result, started directing much more focus and much of their own budget towards providing healthy snacks for kids and towards providing healthy foods for the families. All of their events now have a healthier focus. It's not just the fried chicken down the street. The broader Public Housing Authority establishment is wanting additional gardens in our community. It's actually one of the few things that they get very good press about. So this is something that they can do that they feel like brings residents together in a positive way, but also providing additional services for those residents. And the Family Center staff has started more intensely engaging with residents there, public housing residents. The residents are wanting a playground, and so we've been working with the center staff on how to figure out how to replace a playground. And then the Reading Connection, which is the literacy organization that we're talking about, was so excited by the success of their health-focused read-alouds that they have read-alouds across the Northern Virginia region, and they're doing more health-focused work there. We felt like it was important to look at access to farmers markets in our region. In D.C., there are actually a number of farmers markets that accept food stamps, but in Northern Virginia, there wasn't at the time that we started. So we partnered with a farmers market in a low-income Latino neighborhood. The market directors ran the program. We asked a local hospital to sponsor a double dollar program, which basically doubles the first $10 of every SNAP dollars, the first $10 of every SNAP dollar spent, and we've been working with them on marketing and advertising. This was seen again as a pilot program so that we could see how it worked, how we could grow it in our own community, and then think strategically about other farmers markets in our community that might be close to where low-income residents would want to shop. So in our last thoughts, we've been able to build a lot of success by continuing to engage new partners. So we have a lot of new initiatives, and every time we start something, we expand the coalition rather than continuing to ask the same members to do more, because a lot of them are volunteers. And we try to leverage the skills and interests of our coalition members. So a lot of them, are doing volunteer work. They're doing this because they are passionate about healthy eating and active living in the community. And so I try to make sure that I meet with them, talk with them about their interests, let them understand what the coalition is doing, and figuring out how to interweave them into our work so that it will be both meaningful for them but also fruitful for the coalition. We have a lot of sponsors, and I would like to thank them, and my contact information is here.
Thank you, Carrie, for that. I'd like to open the floor to questions for Carrie, and then we'll have our next presentation. Any questions in that presentation? Yeah?
See, my name is Tony DeLucia. I'm a new member to the section, and it's really exciting. Some of the things that we did on Saturday were some walking audits in Ward 7, which got at some of the opportunities to use green space, like even pocket parks, which would be for recreation, but I won't digress there. It seems like you're already focusing on vulnerable populations. Is there any opportunity to link with academic partners that can help get, besides the health department research abilities, the opportunity to get granular and look at disparities and how to focus on these even more? There's tremendous capacity, tremendous interest. The pipeline for researchers is very needed, and getting, as in sense from the tone of this meeting, much more interest in equity and social justice issues and opportunity. In September, I was at the Place Matters conference here in Washington, and we moved some of these issues and academic partnerships were being discussed in Northern Virginia by, I think it was George Mason, as one of the institutions that's working with Governor McConnell.
So I would say on this project, we have had a pretty much 100% focus on low-income and marginalized populations. That's where the greatest disparities of obesity rates are in Alexandria, overweight and obesity rates are in Alexandria. And we feel like by focusing on those populations that we will also be able to support the broader community. So when we did the preschool initiative, we made sure that we actively recruited preschools that serve lower income children or children in the gap as well as Head Start, but we also expanded the project to be able to include the other preschools. So there wasn't any sort of stigmatizing thing. In terms of academic partnerships, we have a number of academic partnerships. They have not been engaged in this process. Right now, most of our academic partnerships are focused around creating a community indicator system in Alexandria. So our umbrella coalition, the Partnership for a Healthier Alexandria, is developing a community indicator system around a quality of life community indicator system that includes more than health, but parks, transportation, jobs. And we've partnered with Virginia Tech University to do that. And
they want to get their hands dirty?
No, I think that part of it is just that their focus is really in getting the data out to the community. And it's been intentional. Like you have Virginia Tech is in Alexandria. So if we think about wanting to make sure we can move dollars in our community and target city efforts, then the best way to do that in our minds is to begin being more transparent about the data, like what the data is saying we need in our community. And to do that, we need an academic partner, the city has buy-in, and that's where a lot of our focus is. And the data that's going to be collected there is obviously going to impact this initiative. But it's a good point. We should work to
engage. Well, you're planning that.
That is true. It's a good point. We've been doing that kind of work as a coalition, but we have not engaged the academic community in that.
You talked about the strategic plan, but not the comp plan. Is this process tried to affect the local comp plan as well?
So Alexandria doesn't have a comp plan. It has zoning codes from about 35 years ago that sometimes they try to fix.
There's suggestions. In other words, there's sort of suggestions.
Yeah, they do try to fix, but that is a problem, and the planning department is interested in sort of thinking more broadly about it in terms of like neighborhood plans. Since we've really launched, most of the neighborhood plans that are being created right now have been, there's only one in process, and it has been delayed because of a huge BRAC controversy in the community. We were targeting it for food access pieces, but so it's something that, it's one of those things. We have a planning department representative on our coalition, and they're letting us know when we can get more active and when we can insert language, but the opportunity just hasn't been there.
I have a list of questions, but I'll try to keep them limited. you spoke earliest about the breastfeeding initiative and how you were able to create changes within the community to facilitate breastfeeding and to make that more possible in, you know, organizations and in the community. Is there any sort of social marketing to follow that up? Is there any sort of plan to promote breastfeeding in the community now that this is available to them, now that there's more access to places to breastfeed?
I think what our next plan is to start reaching out to businesses. And so because most of the focus has been on making sure that employees had a place, mm-hmm. then it's not so much a need for social marketing within the broader community versus working with employers to make sure that they are effectively communicating breastfeeding policies and information about the breastfeeding room to their employees.
That makes a lot of sense.
Also, a social marketing campaign is very expensive.
Yeah, I've heard that. Anybody else?
Talked about community gardens and low-income housing development. And I was wondering if one of the things, if you did any sort of pre-post in terms of measuring incidents of crime and vandalism. The reason I ask is I'm from Portland, Oregon, and there was a community garden initiative in three housing authority sites, and they did, in addition to all the sort of heating behavior measures, they also tracked crime and vandalism and found that it went down between 80% and 90% in these three sites. And that was what really convinced the housing authority to say, okay, well, this has value to us in terms of, you know, because just approaching it through the healthy eating lens, they're like, yeah, that's nice, but not essential. But when you demonstrated that crime and vandalism actually went down significantly, then the light bulb went off. It's like, yeah, this is something you have to do on all of our properties. I was wondering if that was one of the metrics that you tracked.
No.
Maybe you just didn't have the capacity to do that.
No, we did do evaluations on it. We did evaluations around money saved, healthy eating, physical activity, and then sense of community. Or whether or not they were more likely to know their neighbors before and after the project.
Yeah.
We didn't do any crime and vandalism stats. I don't know, because the community that we were working in, there are a lot of issues within that community, but it's one of the areas in Alexandria where almost everyone's related, because generations of families have lived in these public housing units for decades. And so there's not a lot of vandalism in that area, partly because there's so many eyes on the different apartments. But it would be interesting to ask the Family Center staff if they've received it. I mean, like, so it never came up as an issue, is what I'm saying. But it would be interesting to look at.
I have another question. Can you speak a little bit to how you were able to link the literacy into the community gardens project?
Honestly, the focus was on getting kids to enjoy reading, to enjoy the act of, to learn how to enjoy a book. And the idea was that by increasing their enjoyment of books, that they would start reading more. And through that, the idea from there was that really, if people have higher rates of literacy, then they're going to have better health outcomes.
Sure.
So we didn't try so much to link it to the community gardening project. It just became part of our work within the Family Center. We did make sure that all the volunteers who are working with the Read Aloud program knew about the gardening project, knew about the cooking project, and that they did not bring in unhealthy snacks, and that they focused once a month on the nutrition and physical activity. So there were some links there that we intentionally made, but overall we weren't so worried.
All right.